from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you on 96.5 The Fan. You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. In studio today and then off to Vegas after the show. You ready?
We spent 10 days or whatever in Vegas earlier this year. I feel like this trip's going to be a little less work. Lighter atmosphere.
That's the quiet part.
Don't tell.
The bosses don't need to know that.
Look, Super Bowl weeks are a lot of work. There's a lot of extra stuff to do. In this case, there'll be a little more free time
to have
a little more fun during the trip. So we'll see. I'm going to take it easy on this one. We're going back again in October, so I'm not going to get too out of control. This will be a mild Vegas trip, I think. I don't know.
I'm excited.
Hard to say. Once we get there, then anything's on the table.
I was going to say, that's what you say until you get there.
Yeah, I think so.
I've always told you guys, there's nothing like the flight in, and you see the strip on the right, or the, I guess, be on the right-hand side. There's nothing like that. The lights of the strip, and there's that, the optimism, just the excitement. There's nothing like that when you land in Vegas.
Anything could happen.
You just don't know over the next couple days. So, yeah, we'll be doing our shows from Vegas on Thursday and Friday out at Circa Resort and Casino. We're fired up for that. It's their big contest weekend, literally the largest Survivor contest in the world, largest legal Survivor contest in the world. It takes place.
Is there like a gigantic underground one?
Well, it's you have to say legal. Because some people have different pools or there's offshore stuff. So we're going to be out there talking about that a little bit. We'll also have some national personalities joining us on what they're having as a little bit of a radio row at the convention center inside the convention ballroom inside the hotel, and get a perspective on not only the Chiefs, but college football. We'll have Paul Charchin on the show from Guillotine League. So we're going to have some fun out there. I don't know if I'll get Cody to pay off his bet or not. We shall see.
Only got a couple days. It might be too tight. Hard to say.
Mm-hmm. You're trying to come up with excuses to not do it. I just know it.
Is it bad that
I don't want to go like 2 in the afternoon. Our show starts at 8 in the morning.
That would be weird. We're not doing that. Is it bad that one of the things I'm most looking forward to on this trip is the brisket fried rice?
Yeah, you had it one time, and you haven't stopped talking about this brisket fried rice. Where was it at?
It's at a restaurant inside of Circa, and you obviously order whatever the hell you want, but you should try it. I think you would like it.
I'm open to lots of different cuisine, as you know. I think we're going to go to maybe a steakhouse or something tonight.
That's the plan.
So if somebody's going to be in Vegas tonight, let us know where you're going to be. Maybe we can go get together for a drink, and if not, I know a ton of you are going to be in Vegas in October, and so will we. We'll have more details about exactly what our event will look like. But that Friday night, There's going to be a good chance to hang out with us in Vegas as on the Circa property. So we're really looking forward to it. Vegas is going to be fun.
So we'll talk Vegas. Who knows what'll happen? You never know. We'll probably have some social media content up on our social media channels as well, beginning this evening and then there all day Thursday and Friday. And while we're out there, we'll be keeping an eye on the Royals, watching it from the world's largest sports book, because the Royals, while they're playing a series game today, they're off tomorrow, then they're back at it on Friday. Yesterday, unfortunately, the story once again has been kind of the theme. We all know when they lose,
starting's not good enough.
It means your starting pitching probably didn't extend the game enough, and you're relying on your bullpen too much. And that's what happened last night. Cole Reagans did not have his best stuff. I think it's pretty obvious. 5 innings, 4 earned, and then after that, your bullpen gives up another 4. You end up losing 9-5 to the Angels, and luckily the Twins also lost, so you didn't lose that spot, but you gave back what you had gained the prior day with the Guardians and also the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, so that's going to happen every day, so we shouldn't be upset every time somebody gives a game back or forth. That's not a big deal. Yeah, it's nice that the Twins lost. Would I prefer that the Guardians and everybody else lose too? Sure. But overall, it was still, like, the bullpen was annoying last night because they crawled themselves back into the game a couple times, so it's 7-5. Ooh, just a 2-run home run away, just a bloop and a blast.
I thought they were going to come back. I mean, usually after the 7th inning, the Royals bats come alive, and they've done that multiple times this year.
Especially when it was 5-7, and they still had 2 runners on. I thought, okay, it is full late game comeback time for the Royals, and they're going to get one against the Angels. But the bullpen just kept letting him back in it. I know everyone's going to pick on MacArthur for some reason. Cole Reagans walked a guy and plunked a guy and put himself in a heap of trouble. And this is just not, don't take this as a season-long defense. The softest possible contact killed MacArthur in that game.
It happens.
And then the rest of the bullpen did not do its job either. I'll take it as a standard loss. But it does make me wonder the question, which is, you know, our confidence level in the bullpen right now, right? Because Hunter Harvey's injury risk is going to be lengthened. There's going to be more time with Hunter Harvey on the sideline now because he had to get another cortisone shot or whatever it was yesterday, which means I think Cutrero said he'd hope that he'd start playing catch again later this week.
Yeah, two to three days, and that was yesterday. So.
Playing catch, not getting on a mound, not pitching again, not back with the team. You probably can't count on Hunter Harvey for a huge chunk of these very important games coming up. And you see what happens when you get outside of the three bullpen arms you kind of like. The three bullpen, Ursig we love. We can just establish that. I like Bubich. And then there's like usually a third guy I can trust depending on the day. Outside of that, you go deeper into that bullpen. If it starts getting into the Stratton and MacArthur, you know, my confidence is kind of shot.
And now it sets up, you know, frankly, a game you really need to win. You can't be dropping series to the Angels when you're in the spot that you're in, when we know the Royals have this tough 20-game stretch ahead, beginning with the Phillies this weekend. And so this is one where, you know, you're putting a lot on Michael Lorenzen to go out and give you a quality outing today. And he has been doing that in his first, two, three outings with the Royals organization. You're going to need that again tonight out at Kauffman Stadium to make sure you get a series win. I don't think, yes, you would have loved to be setting up for a sweep, but if you win this series, you're fine. Now, if you lose the series, then it turns into a pretty big disappointment to start this homestand. You win the series, you're fine. You take 2 out of 3 from the Angels. You get an off day tomorrow, and then let's see what happens against the Phillies, and you begin that really tough road. So tonight, you know, Michael Lorenzen, you're not asking him to give you 7 innings. That's not, but can he give you 6 quality innings? He's been giving you like 5 2/3, 5 2/3. And then,
that's kind of what you traded for.
Ursig is available tonight now because he hasn't pitched in a couple days. So they should have just about everybody available that the one guy or two guys you maybe trust, but really it's one guy that you trust in this bullpen. And hopefully the bats are also going a little bit earlier. Yesterday, we know that it was scoreless until the 4th inning. Angels got the 2 runs in the top, and you're like, oh, the Royals right away answered back with 2. And you're thinking, okay, they're going to, I don't know about you. Cool. You thought, oh, they're going to win this game. They answered the 2 right away, and then you give up 5 runs between the 6th and 7th inning. And at that point, it seemingly was out of reach.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to lose it until Cole Reagans lost it. But this is the other part I think that we've talked maybe a little bit less about as far as a common theme for when the Royals lose. And this probably still speaks to the youth of the team or the inexperience of the team, because there is still plenty of that. I understand they have guys like Salvador Perez. Do you realize how little playoff experience this team has? I mean, it's practically none. None for Vinny, for Bobby Wood Jr., none for Renfro's got some. Pretty much no one in the starting rotation.
Waka,
right? So you got one guy, none for Singer, none for Reagans, none, you know, a little for Lugo. And so there isn't much experience when it comes to that way. And so if you look at where they're at, I think the one thing I notice in these games, and last night was a perfect example of it, the very first play of the day, when they lose, they look so sloppy. Like, it just seems like it's not like they just had a bad night and someone couldn't pitch. It's Hampson's dropping the ball. They don't complete double plays. Sloppiness in the starting pitching, right? Where Reagans doesn't just give up a hit and get beat. He plunks a guy, then walks a guy, then this one sneaks through. It turns into this, like, not comedy of errors. It's not like a bad team where they're, like, getting rolled up into tarps or falling into dugouts. But they just play, like, they don't play clean baseball and lose. Everything just kind of, like, stumbles on itself when they lose. And I think that that's kind of what stands out when they lose these games. But, yeah, the bullpen had a bad night. I'm still about where I was in the bullpen. I'm more confident than I was 2 months ago because, at the very least, I know if they need three outs or one big out, I got Urcig.
Yeah, no, I think that's the saving grace right now, clearly, is the move for Urcig. But what you said there, we know what the formula has been when they win, and typically we do know what it looks like when they lose. It's, you know, yes, it's a combination of a few things, but especially when all of a sudden you're having mistakes in the field, that's when you really know it's one of those games, one of those nights that you're probably not going to win. And can you overcome that? It's one thing if you have an issue where your starting pitcher has a rough outing and then you're relying on the bullpen. That's already a problem. But then you couple it with last night didn't have this. But if you have base running mistakes and you have a routine fly ball that you just drop, that kind of stuff, I mean, that'll get you every single time. With the way this team has won all year, that is what's going to get them. And hopefully they get it back tonight against the Angels. And as I said, if they win the series, then last night we can kind of erase from our memory. If they lose today, then all of a sudden you lose the series to a bad Angels team. So win today, everybody calm down, and then get set for the Phillies this weekend out at Kauffman Stadium, where it should be some big-time crowds, I would think, out of the K, because it's also going to be gorgeous weather.
Well, it is a Kane or somebody bobblehead night on Friday night. So bobblehead night, Friday, Phillies in town. That will be a good crowd.
Did you see who's pitching tonight, though? Not
I did.
For the Royals.
You know what?
I'm looking at Angels.
I'm looking at it the same way that everyone else did. Just like in 2015. Look who's coming to help the Royals win the World Series by helping them win today by being bad this time instead. Johnny Cueto.
I was reminded about this. Remember this? 2014 or 2015?
Yeah, I do. What a different time. This feels like a different lifetime ago. Johnny Baseball, won't you? How often does this get played in sports radio in this town?
A lot. So hopefully he can help the Royals in a reverse way tonight. And he, you know, he's a guy that continues to find a way to get spot starts. Last year, I think he was on the Marlins, if I'm not mistaken, and he got a couple spot starts after being in the minors. And here you are. The Angels are, you know, been done for a while. They need some innings, and they call up the vet who just loves baseball, wants to keep playing, and hopefully, I'll be honest, yeah, hopefully he struggles tonight against the Royals.
It's hard to continue to ignore the parallels between the 14 and 15 teams and some of the things going on with this team. We talked about this the other day, the relative mediocrity, if you will, of the American League, where no one's going to win more than 100 games. In this case, they're using it through starting pitching instead of the bullpen, but like one area, the pitching staff holding court over the rest of the American League for a good chunk of it. Obviously, the biggest difference now is they have a superstar on their team in Bobby Wood Jr., one of the five best players in the sport, versus that year when it's just they were so balanced, in 14 really balanced, in 15 even more so, where top to bottom you couldn't really get them all that easy. Last night, I know this sounds so silly. I know they lost the game, but last night was another perfect example of if there's one thing you can rely on this team other than the starting pitching is that when Bobby Wood Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, and Salvador Perez come up to plate back-to-back-to-back, they're going to get some runs. They're going to put some runs on the board for you 80% of the time, 90% of the time, I don't know. The entire comeback where they didn't even quite come back.
Yeah, they didn't come back.
The beginning of a comeback was all fueled by them again. It's the same grouping of players. I would like a little more production out of the bottom of the order, but that's probably next off-season's problem.
How do you lengthen
the lineup?
Yeah, they're a flawed team. That's one of them. And a lot of teams would love after their number two, three, and four hitters to get production from the bottom of the lineup. I mean, that's just
evergreen, yeah,
type of deal. You're right though about that group. Last night, I believe Vinny now has more RBI post All-Star break than any other player in baseball. I think it was Jake Eisenberg, if I heard him correctly last night, listening on 96.5 The Fan. That was something that he referenced after Vinny got the RBI. So the Royals are back at it tonight. We'll talk Royals throughout the show, of course. Also, Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, is going to join us for his weekly visit. Come up at 12:30. Vern's on deck show tonight, 6 o'clock, against the Angels right here on 96.5. The Fan. Let's talk Chiefs for a little bit because they have a preseason game tomorrow. We know the starters are not going to play, but there's some guys further down the roster that ultimately one coach on the staff wants Nico Remigio to make this team. Did you hear Dave Tobe yesterday? He said when he was asked about potential kickoff returners, he focused on Nico Remigio. He said, quote, could be McColl. Nico did a great job. I'm going to be pounding the table for that guy. I love him. And he was referencing Nico Remigio. He went on to talk about Carson Steele. He looks good back there. He hits it north and south. He'll be able to block. He's a guy that you could use as a backup running back somewhere. That's Dave Tobe, who we know gets more say than most special teams coordinators on roster decisions. Usually he gets like, what, one or two guys that he can kind of, as he said, pound the table for and say, yes, hey, I need, this guy can really help me. I need this guy on my special teams. That's a hell of an endorsement for Nico Remigio. And unless things go poorly on Thursday, that puts him in a better spot. We were trying to figure out what the back end of the wide receiver room looks like. We all think Kadarius Toney's going to get cut. I think Sky makes the team, but I hear these comments and it makes me wonder a little bit because they can't keep Sky and keep McColl and keep Nico and keep Justin Ross. Who can they get to the practice squad? Based on that comment from
gave a giant endorsement of the guy.
It makes me wonder once again if they think they can get Justin Ross to the practice squad, unless Sky Moore's a surprise cut.
I think this might say something about Sky. I think it's 50-50. I would be equally not surprised or surprised, depending on how you look at it, that if it's Sky Moore or Justin Ross is the last two wide receivers on the roster, because the difficulty in Sky Moore is a little bit of what we talked about with Tony, because I can't even claim super athleticism with Sky Moore. Tell me what Sky Moore does better than anyone else on this route. Tell me what he does better than Justin Ross. Tell me what, maybe return a kick. Justin Ross has done that too.
Yeah, Justin Ross is just not really a special teams player. No. He can't really help him there.
So maybe that's where Sky Moore is better. Although that's not what Sky's been asked to do a lot of.
Right.
He hasn't been on kick coverage during his time, so he's running into the same problem Justin Ross is. Remigio is a four-phase player. And I've covered this team. I've talked to Dave years. Used to cover the team every day for years. Dave Tobe, 1,000%, gets to borderline handpick the final two guys on the roster. I bet he sits. I would stop short of saying he probably sits down in Brett Veach's office and he's like, hey, man, we're between these five guys. And he's like, I want these two. And just as long as Brett Veach thinks the other three guys will possibly slip through waivers and not that somebody is interested in the other one, those are the two who end up on the roster. So now I am to assume Nico Remigio is on this roster. Why would he say those things about him unless he was trying to get Remigio a job somewhere else? And that just doesn't make sense. I assume he's one of the wide receivers. So we're down to Sky Moore or Justin Ross on the team. Who would you rather have?
I would still choose Sky because I think I can get Justin Ross to the practice squad. Whereas some team would see Sky was a second round pick and is more likely to try to get him on their active roster. So that's kind of where I would be at. Now, you know, if Nico has a huge mistake on Thursday, or on the flip side, if he also makes another nice play, then that also solidifies him. But yeah, it seems more and more like it's between Sky and Justin Ross suddenly because of that. And I just think the practice squad part is a huge factor here. It's a numbers game, but also who do they think they can still keep through the practice squad, therefore not lose, versus someone that they think another team for sure would go ahead and acquire.
Someone said Sky Moore is better at cardio. Maybe. As much as Sky Moore was a part of that, it was really MVS I was picking on for that. That man was running like 70% of the routes for like 8 weeks and getting one catch a game. He was the one getting cardio. I'm sure Sky Moore was doing some running too. This is funny because we spent a lot of time talking about sixth and seventh wide receivers. The truth is, if they cut Sky Moore and choose Justin Ross, or cut Justin Ross and cut Sky and choose Sky Moore, I don't care. Neither of them are going to have a massive impact on the success of this year's team. The more interesting storyline is if they choose to cut Sky Moore, although I'm pretty sure we can already say this, we can officially label the gigantic red letter bust.
That's your favorite thing to
do. It doesn't matter. You know, it's a missed pick.
Yeah, no question.
It's hard. Well, in the first and the second rounds and the third rounds, those are the ones I pay attention to. I don't care if you cut a guy out of the fifth round who never makes your team. I don't care if he makes it out of camp. First round and second round picks, I'd like you to not throw zeros there. And in McColl Hardman's case, not a zero. guys helped your team, was on your roster for a five-year period, was on some Super Bowl championships, had 500 yards receiving here or there. Sky Moore's never even lived up to that. His best season as a Chief is like 300 yards. And outside of that, one good punt return in a playoff game and one two-yard touchdown in a Super Bowl. His highlight package is pretty lean. And so I don't want him to, I'd rather just be good right now. That would be helpful. But, I mean, the only interesting storyline out of that is they've now chosen Justin Ross, a guy they paid nothing for and had no investment in other than just time, for Sky Moore, a guy they spent a second-round pick on and had time and money and all these things invested in, and decided that wasn't going to work anymore.
If that's what they choose,
if,
by the way.
If.
That, for if. Those, yes. He hasn't made a decision on that yet. But, yeah, it looks like it could come down to those particular players. I mean, I guess there's also the scenario, Cody, before the 27th that – is there some team out there we can kind of roll our eyes at it, but we joked yesterday about Tony. Is there some team out there that is willing to offer a they see something and they want to offer a conditional sixth or seventh round pick or something like that?
For Sky, that wouldn't be crazy.
For Sky or somebody.
If they got a third for Kadarius Tony, the most yardage he'd had in the season was 500.
If, in fact, they trade him. I'll still go with that Sky and Remigio make it, and then Justin Ross goes to the practice squad. But it's a coin flip, and as you said, ultimately, it's not going to have a huge impact on this team. You could argue the guy that is on special teams has a bigger impact, and while that could be Nico, that could be Sky Moore than Justin Ross, even though we all agree Ross presents something that they don't have, which is just kind of, you know, that size receiver to go up and get a football. But can he get open just on running across the middle of the field? And that we've never seen.
That actually makes the Sky part of that interesting, which is if you had to trade one guy and you thought you could get a conditional sixth, you're far more likely to get the value out of Sky than Justin Ross. Nobody's calling off a new sixth for Ross, I don't think. No. And if you Sky, it will be some team who had him also graded in the second round, who is, and sometimes this works, by the way. The reason why teams do this is sometimes a change of scenery and a change of system and all those things actually does benefit the player. It does occur, like Brandon Lloyd or whoever you want to go back and look at these players who have found success. So there probably is a team out there. So if you're between the two and you think you don't care like we don't care, well, then find a trade partner for Sky Moore. Get a little bit of draft equity out of it and just keep Justin Ross.
Reminder, Chiefs preseason game tomorrow against the Bears at Arrowhead. It's right here on 96.5. The Fan, your home for the Chiefs and your home for Kansas City sports. Around the NFL, though, there's some other teams that their star players have not been practicing very often. There's some question on their availability. We know what's going on in Dallas. There's a few other spots. Of these names, do you think any of these players actually miss a single game, though? So Ja'Marr Chase in Cincinnati is doing the old hold-in kind of deal in Cincy. CeeDee Lamb, we know, wants a new deal. Jerry Jones said they're not in any rush to get that done. Trent Williams, a future Hall of Fame left tackle. Kind of a hold-in type of situation going on there. Brandon Ayuk, pretty obvious. We know the trade rumor's been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And yet,
I might be bordering on months now.
Sits there, and I still think he's not getting traded. Do any of them miss a single game, though? Because there's a difference, as we saw last year here in Kansas City. Chris Jones ended up missing one game. He was never going to miss a large portion of the season, but he missed one game. Is there anybody on this list that you could think that could miss a game, and then they do the same thing? All of a sudden, they add some incentives, and that player comes back. That's the only way I could see CeeDee Lamb missing week one, and then they find some scenario to give him a few extra bucks this year, and then he's back. Because he also, especially at a wide receiver position, needs to play this season to not only the accrued season, but he has an opportunity to really increase his payday if he has another strong year in Dallas.
Man, the CeeDee Lamb story has been so interesting because, like, he's openly on social media just being like, what the hell are we doing here? Because the Jones family can't, let's just, like, be cool about it. And I know Jerry Jones yesterday said that they'd had some, he thought, encouraging talks with CeeDee Lamb's camp. I actually think two guys are playing. I don't think they miss a single snap. I think one guy is going to miss, like, a game. I think the other guy might miss more significant time. Here's the order. I think Ja'Marr Chase is holding in. I think he will play week one. I think Ja'Marr Chase will figure out, with 2 years left on his contract, some way to swallow his pride and be on Cincinnati's team for week one, and I don't think he'll miss time. I think Brandon Ayuk will also play week one because I'm still not totally sure that's for the 49ers, but I think he's either getting traded or getting a deal before week one, in which case I think he's playing week one. I think CeeDee Lamb misses a game. I think he Chris Jones it. I think he makes the point. He misses a game with Dallas. Dak struggles a little bit. And then they give him the little incentive to keep things moving along or find some way to pay him. And CeeDee Lamb just missed the game. Trent Williams is a total wild card in this. He's the one I could see missing six games. I'm not just saying that. He did it once.
Yeah.
When he was asking for a new contract, he sat out like six games for Washington.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the backstory with Trent Williams and the Commanders, they treated him incredibly poorly during a cancer diagnosis. So there might have been some other factors at play for why he was maybe not willing to bend over backwards for the Commanders at that time. But Trent Williams is the one where I still think, I think he's about the dollar. Trent Williams has made it very clear he has always gone to the single highest bidder. And I don't think if you don't make his money right, I don't think he'll show up to work for a month. You think they're all, you don't think anybody's missing any time?
I told you CeeDee Lamb, before you were going through all the names, I told you I think CeeDee Lamb is the one guy maybe misses a game. Otherwise, no, I don't think any of them are missing any time. It's the NFL. We just know financially it's usually not worth it. Hell, even Chris Jones, he had to go out there and get a sack in the last week of the season to get some of his money back that he missed by sitting out. So I think CeeDee Lamb's the only one. Other than that, I do not believe that. You're right about Trent Williams. His history, though, that was a way different scenario in D.C. That was, doctors were basically, I don't want to say lying, but certainly didn't help his treatment plan while he was going through some stuff off the field. And that was just a terribly run organization when Dan Snyder was running the show. So I don't know if we can say, oh, he did it before, why not again? We'll see. I think a lot of this gets just settled out. I know we're like, man, the season's right around the corner. It is. For the Chiefs, 15 days away, the Chiefs open up. For other teams, it's what, 19 days or 18 days. That's still a long time in the contract negotiation world, if that makes sense. You know, all of a sudden it can be Thursday or Friday before the Sunday game and Trent Williams or CeeDee Lamb gets taken care of.
Especially because there's not like the preseason, quote unquote, is done after this weekend. There's like that 2-week period where there's really nothing going on, or the week and a half period where there's just practice. So it's not like there's no training camp officially. It's like
you think it's just like, well, we got time to do contracts now. I mean, they had six months.
Kind of.
It is always a little, I know deadlines spur action and they always will, because, you know, we thought Creed Humphrey's deal would be done by now, but also Creed hasn't said anything. He's at camp working quiet.
That could happen game week.
I mean, he's just minding his P's and Q's, probably because he thinks the deal's getting done. The louder voices tend to be the ones where this deal is a little more contentious, where I understand, I don't know if it's going to happen, because sometimes people talk about bubbles in a million different ways, right? Like, I'm sure during 2022, people thought, you know, real estate was getting, you know, whatever, right? The wide receiver bubble, is that real? Or are these numbers going to keep going just like haywire forever? I think some of these teams are starting to see the numbers it costs to keep a number one wide receiver, and they're telling themselves, man, I don't know. That is a really big number. Chiefs walked away from it. Other teams have. And I think some of these other ones are like on the fence a little bit about whether that's a good idea.
All right, coming up next here on Cody and Gold, we're just getting started on a Wednesday. I was asked a question on an interview in another market about the Chiefs and what their floor is. We'll see if you guys agree with my answer next.
This is Cody and Gold on your new home for K-State Athletics. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by Heartland Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Thousands of men have been successfully treated for low T, ED, and more, all with discretion and compassion. Make your appointment at heartlandmenshealth.com.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
All right, back here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about 8 minutes, we'll get to some comments from Bill Belichick. What he had to say about the Chiefs, one area he thinks they need to improve, it might actually surprise you, but I was, as you have as well, Cody, this time of the year, starting to do a lot of interviews around the country. We want to talk about the Chiefs heading in the year and how did camp go and what's the expectation and how much is three-peat being discussed. But I was on a station yesterday and they said, hey, what is the floor for the Chiefs this year? They're like, hey, if things go wrong, what's the floor? And I'm curious if you guys agree with my answer or you think it's different. Record-wise, I said, oh, the floor? 10 wins. I go, that is the floor. That is if all of a sudden their left tackle, Kingsley, ends up being a major.
I assume we're eliminating the Mahomes injury or something,
course,
right?
Of course. Because if that, by the way.
I think you can consider that the floor. It's like a disaster more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
That's a crash. That's not like.
When someone asks you the floor, they're not assuming your starting quarterback is out for the season. So I said 10 wins. They still win the division, but they're the four seed. And does sound familiar, by the way, from last year? Not too far different. And
it's pretty much floor.
All of a sudden, their left tackle is a liability. Their right tackle still has a holding penalty problem. I go, that's the floor. You guys disagree? Like, the floor is not less than 10 wins. The QB injury thing, that is not the floor. That is, as you said, a disaster. And also, I'll be honest, with Carson Wentz and Andy Reid and this offense and this defense, I wouldn't say it's impossible they would still win 10 games. So the floor with Mahomes healthy is 10 games.
I mean, just no universe in which I'm going to choose a single digit number, okay? Just no universe. And we'll let us know. 913-586-7965. That is the text line. 913-586-7965. We know we had trouble the first couple of days. Up and running.
It is.
You want to text this show? It is 913-586-7965. I would almost go 11.
Like, the floor?
Yes. I think it, you know what? It is 11. I'm not even being like, on this show, I'm not. They're going 17-0 and then straight to the Super Bowl. And Mahomes is going to throw for 9,000 yards, guy. It's not who I am. I am optimistic about the things that deserve to be optimistic. Every single year, under Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, they've never lost more than 11. Or never won less than 11, sorry.
Yeah. Last year.
And I've never, that was that team had problems. The offensive line was no worse than this one. Probably the same, maybe a little bit worse, right? I mean, this offensive line is not worse than last year's. Okay, so it's at least as good as last year's because four of the five pieces are the same. So, yeah, I mean, I guess if Kingsley disaster.
I said the floor is 10 because of Kingsley, but also if the number two cornerback, which we're going to talk more about later in the show, if that ends up being an actual issue without Snead. But, that is the floor. The ceiling's a different conversation.
The ceiling is 17-0.
The ceiling is, 16 wins or something. Yeah.
I think it's honestly 17-0. I wouldn't bet on it, but that's the ceiling. Yeah. Because for the same reason, if you're like cornerback two doesn't go well and Kingsley doesn't go well, if that goes great and corner two turns out to be a stud and Xavier Worthy's great, well, this team might not lose a game. The ceiling the floor is 11 because I've never seen them be worse than that. Even under Alex Smith and Andy Reid, they consistently won like 11 games. So it's hard for me to imagine a world in which Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes exist where Chris Jones is still on this team, Travis Kelce is still on this team, Rashee is not, I guess on the floor scenario, maybe I assume he gets suspended tomorrow in that hypothetical and it changes the math a little bit.
And even Brown's hurt a bunch, stuff like that.
And even then, I think they'd scratch out 11.
Drew, what about you? Where are you at?
I think that there's, I think 10's the floor. I agree with you, Gold. I don't see I think 11. It just sounds weird. You know, it just sounds.
Well, they're that damn good.
I think if they were in the AFC North, if they were in a different division,
maybe you could change the number.
I think it definitely changes the number. Maybe you go 9, but a winning record. If you're in the AFC North, I think you might. Like
I don't
nine,
know how you can even get down to 9.
Might be a possibility.
Yeah, I don't know how you could get down to 9 with the floor, even if they were in a tougher division.
Carson Wentz might win 9.
That's what I'm saying.
If week one he started, they might win 9.
Yeah.
If Carson Wentz played the whole season.
Yeah, I think they would win at least 9 games.
In this division, with Andy Reid
and with the weapons and the defense, they're going to have a top 10 defense and a top 10 offense. If they had Carson Wentz, they still might be a number 10 to 12 offense in football.
In this division, sure. But Carson Wentz in any, I think the division actually plays a little bit of a factor in it. But there's,
I hear you.
I think 10 and 7 is the floor. I think that's fair.
I think that's
because
what it is.
Because we haven't seen. There's no competition in the division. Like you can't seriously say, like for all the people that say the Chargers are going to do this, I don't think you can seriously say right now, the Chargers are going to win. You can't. Nobody is in the same stratosphere as the Chiefs are right now in that division. I think 10 is definitely the floor. I think it's fair to say. It might be fair to say 11 because the division stinks so bad. It might actually be fair.
Point to me when they won less than that. Before that, their previous low was 12. I'm still giving you the floor of what has been their absolute floor in seven full seasons, right? I mean, 6 full seasons. I'm telling you what has been the actual floor. I'm not even making up a number. That's what they've actually been. And back on the Chargers, I'm really having a hard time putting behind the corniness of Harbaugh and my lack of confidence in them, because he is so corny. I'm having a hard time taking him seriously as a coach in the NFL again.
Yeah, but this is what he did in Michigan. They just won a national championship. I mean, that's just this crap right here.
It's not just another day. It's 2 days.
They introduced him on the field as coming on the field, Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers.
Yeah.
Like, they played a letter pinned by Jim Harbaugh. I'm like, I'm having a hard time. You guys seem so silly as a franchise. And this just seems like the final comedy that like buries you to the reset or something. And I know that like, you know, Justin Herbert's coming from a plantar fascia injury too. So like maybe that's factoring
in. No, I don't think they're doing anything this year. Next year, I actually think with the right moves, they will be a factor again in the AFC West conversation.
You just don't think this season.
Not this year. They have too many holes. They needed to clear out some older players. They did. They made the necessary moves to long-term put them in a better spot. This year, I'm not expecting anything. Now, next year, I think it will be a real conversation about pushing the Chiefs a little bit, but this year, no, absolutely not. And then you couple it with, as you said, a Herbert foot injury that even if he is fine week one, and I told you I think they're losing to the Raiders in week one, the Chargers are, but even if that goes well for them, in week 10, does the foot flare up and Herbert is out for another month at that point?
I think until they lose out of the division, like like you were saying, Gold, the Chargers might be able to push them a little bit more next year, but until the Chiefs get beaten, I don't know if they ever, in Mahomes' era, ever win less than 10 games. Like, I don't know if they,
no.
I don't know if
no.
they ever,
I don't think so either.
That's, ever
that's
will.
The floor.
I don't think they will. That's why I think I'm not sure they'll ever win less than 11. It's a 17 game schedule. I think he'll always get 11. Look, we're going to Vegas later today as a show. Warren Sharp every year puts out the strength of schedule based on forecasted Vegas win totals. A pretty fair way, we would agree, of doing strength of schedule, because that way, at the very least, you're eliminating some of the bad teams. We'll get a better sense of it as it plays out. The Chargers do have the second easiest schedule, but the Chiefs have the 11th easiest schedule. The Chiefs, the two-time defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs, get the Raiders twice, the Broncos twice, the Chargers twice, and the entire NFC South. And then some teams that are first-place teams from last year that everyone has real questions about, like the Bills and the Bengals. Because as much as, like, can Herbert stay healthy, we got to ask it about Burrow. And we don't know what the wide receivers are like for the Bills. Even those teams don't seem as daunting on paper as they have in previous years because there's more unknowns about where they are. We just don't know where they are.
Bengals are just playing because they're playing the AFC North this year. The first-place schedule, that doesn't even factor in, because remember, the Bengals didn't even finish.
I just make questions about, they're...
They're playing the Bills because they were the first place team in the AFC East or whatever. But the
Bengals are just playing because
AFC North, they're playing against Pittsburgh and everything. But the NFC South is the biggest factor in the whole strength of the schedule win total discussion. You know, other than the Falcons, I mean, Carolina still could be one of the worst teams or the worst team in football this year. The Saints were disappointing last year. They finished with the same record as the Bucs. Everybody acts like the Bucs ran, like, clearly won the division. They tied with the Saints. The Saints just lost the tiebreaker. But the Bucs, I think, could take a step back.
I still think
I think the Falcons win that division by multiple games this year.
Same.
I mean, I think we're talking about the Chiefs floor. You could say like the Saints ceiling is 9-8 with Dennis Allen, or 8-9 with Dennis Allen. I mean, it's just the way that it's gone for him.
Last year was their year to capitalize when you had, going into the season, Baker had been coming off terrible seasons and you didn't have Kirk Cousins in the division. Last year was the year for the Saints to win the division. They're not winning it this particular year. We mentioned the floor for the Chiefs. What does Bill Belichick have to say about this Chiefs team? I thought it was kind of interesting. He mentioned one area for the Chiefs to improve in 2024.
I think the bigger issues are going to be on defense. You know, they couldn't turn the ball over. Look, they played very, very well in the playoffs, so that's where it counts, and that's the most important thing. But overall, as a team, run defense, turnovers, you know, I think that's an area that they're going to want to improve in. And I just think it's going to be tough this year. They're a good team. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. I just think this third year, for it all to fall into place 3 years in a row is tough. I think if anybody can do it, it's probably Kansas City, but it won't be easy. It won't be easy.
Well, if anybody can do it, they're the only team that can do it. They are, in fact, the only team going to win three in a row. That is a fact.
I think he just meant in NFL history.
I know. I'm being a smart ass about it. But no, look, the stuff he mentioned, though, are all things. I mean, heck, we had multiple Chiefs players on with us at camp. They all acknowledge they need to turn the ball over. They all acknowledge that, mm-hmm. you know, these things. We all know it's, of course, very difficult to win three in a row. It's very difficult to win back-to-back, and nobody's gone three in a row. So I don't think he's wrong. But does anybody not think we're still talking about a top 10 defense in football? Even if you told me they take a slight step back, they're still a top 10 defense.
I think that I was really interested by this answer because it made me ask myself the question, which is it more important the defense improves this year or the offense? And I was like, well, it's the offense, right? Like, that seemed like the painfully obvious answer based on last year's team. But I do think that there's a natural improvement of the offense generally anyway, right? Better wide receivers, another year of figuring out who you are, a deep passing game again, etc. In a way, I actually think Bill Belichick's right, because I've said on this show, and I stand very firmly by it, maintaining high-level defense year to year is not as easy as it sounds. Just because each of the last 2 years they've been a top-five defense does nowhere near guarantee them being a top-10 defense again this year. It's really hard to maintain. People age faster, or the play gets worse, or people figure out your defensive style. I don't know what it is, but really good defense in this league lasts like 3 years. They're like running backs. And then you have to rebuild and start again.
I'll tell you this. The age thing I'm not concerned about. Who on the defense is just aging out? There's nobody else that was a...
But if Chris Jones took a step back, but he's the biggest cog to their entire
defense.
Anybody
think we're in any sign of that?
No.
Yeah, I don't think the other things are fair. The age thing, not worried. It's not like they have an aging corner. It's not like, you know, and Chris Jones, old. He's not 34, you know, so
yeah.
I'm not
and it's not
about
like
the
a Nnamdi Asomugha. Trent McDuffie's still in year three in the NFL. He's not going to just, because corners do it too. Corners fall off about as fast as running backs do. A corner will play really good, high level. Stephon Gilmore was a great corner. He was the best corner in the league. He's getting 1 year, $10 million deals now. He's hopping team to team. He can barely stay on a squad. And so defensive ability changes very quickly, which in a funny way means I could reverse it, Gold. I could tell you that it's actually more important that the offense get good, because if the defense takes any half step back, the easiest way to make up that ground is just be elite on offense again. Which, you know, I don't think he's way off base there. Well, I do think they're going to be a really good
turnover defense. Thing is fair. I mean, the turnover thing, we just talked about that. That was, you know, Bill Barnwell had the piece and he mentioned the turnovers, and some of it we can claim is bad luck. You know, the fumble percentage recovery, it was way below league average. And then in the postseason, suddenly they were recovering 72% of all their fumbles. So it flipped like that.
That helped.
You know, so sure, that is very true. If you protect the football and if you get takeaways, things are going to go well for you.
Points per game wise, which unit do you think ranks higher this season?
It's a great question.
Offense, that's actually a really, it's actually like, it's kind of closer than you think.
I still think it'd be offense. As we said, you know, a day ago, I don't think the offense is historically great like 2018, but if they are a top five offense again, that puts you in most years, what, getting back to scoring 30, 29 and a half points per game, something like that.
Yeah, right around there.
So I think that'll be high. The defense only giving up, what was it, at times 20 something points a game or something? It was crazy.
Right around there.
I think it'll move up a tick.
So the Chiefs last year scored 22.2 points per game. In order to be a top five offense, they would have needed 5.2 points more per game. So almost a full touchdown.
So if I think they're back to being a 28 points per game offense,
they
would
be the third best offense. 28.6 was second best.
Okay.
So
that was a low scoring year. I'll say the year before that, 28 would probably make you like fifth.
Defensively last year, for them to stay top three, they were second last year. They needed.
Oh, I take it back.
The Niners were 17.1 points per game allowed. If you wanted to be top 10, you had to allow less than 19 points per game.
I think they go hand in hand, though. Like, sometimes you say, well, duh, if you can't stop anybody, you're in a shootout. But I mean, as we remember from many years ago, when the offense is explosive again, it does, in a reverse way, kind of put pressure on the defense because they're just on the field more. Not that, like, there were tons of pressure on the defense last year because of the offensive struggles.
Like, I'm tired. Why'd you score so quick?
Where if you're going to have the big plays, we all love that. I think we would all sign up for the averaging 29, 30 points per game.
Yes, please.
But it could lead to the defense seemingly having a worse year statistically. And I think that's what's going to happen.
There was only one team last year who averaged more than 30 points. It was Dallas. There was none in 2022. The Chiefs led the league at 29.2 points per game. So not a single team averaged 30. There was only one in 2021. And then in 2022, there were two. So if you get to the Chiefs at 30 points a game, Gold, you're the number one offense in the league. So, you know that it's a touchdown difference, which is not insignificant. If you made me guess, by the way, I'd side with you. If you said which one finished with better points per game, I'd say it's the offense.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll get back to the Royals and what exists if this team does, in fact, make the playoffs. But Cody, your favorite head coach in the NFL was speaking about how they succeeded during the draft and their guy, Bo Nix.
Okay, I'm going to play this clip, and then I'm going to tell you how I feel about Sean Payton. Sean Payton had this to say. He duped, according to his own opinion, you know, teams in the draft when they were going to take Bo Nix.
Behind us were the Raiders. So our concern right behind us were the Raiders. And I just, then it was like, well, call the Raiders and tell them we might want to move back to see if.
Yeah.
And so there was this, they didn't want to move up. And then there's that, you know, minute you wait and then we'll stay put and the Jets make their pick. And then here we are.
What was the reaction like in the draft room?
It was outstanding. It was outstanding. It was.
Did you see it? It was amazing. They were.
Okay, the end part of that is just like, did you see everyone was excited when they took a first-round quarterback? Every draft room ever, so we can chill on that a little bit.
Yeah, so that's not a big deal either way, though.
Part,
so who cares that they did that?
That part I don't care. Him trying to claim, like, they duped the Raiders into not taking. We fooled them! We got him! Sean Payton is the worst guy at your office. Every single person in their life has somebody like Sean Payton who is actively trying to convince everyone he is the smartest dude in the room. I wanted Patrick Mahomes. I fooled the Raiders. I got the whole league duped. They stink. They're going to stink forever. This isn't going to work. None of this is going to work. Payton's going to be fired in 5 years. Bo Nix is going to flame out. This whole thing's going to fall flat in their face.
Most coaches are fired every 3 to 5 years.
He wants to so desperately be the smartest damn person in the NFL rather than just like accept where his flaws might be and try to improve. He's trying to actively convince us he's got us all fooled. Okay. Sure, man.
This isn't new, though, because right after the draft in April, after we were done having our draft party up north at the landing, the next day, Sean Payton says they kind of duped the Vikings. Remember
that? So now that they're fooled the whole league.
At the time, he said they got the Vikings because they, you know, maybe that's why the Vikings get JJ McCarthy, and unfortunately now we know he's out for the season, but at the time. And he then claimed that they kind of fooled the Vikings. So now he's fooled the Raiders and the Vikings. Sean Payton, man, just smartest coach.
Got you all on edge.
He's the smartest coach in the league.
You'll never figure me out.
Did the Vikings trade up in front of the Broncos? Because I think his whole theory of tricking them is completely wrong.
That the Raiders didn't trade up to take Bo Nix. By the way, I like the idea. Like, we're going to trade back, so they probably don't think we're taking Bo Nix now. They probably just didn't want to trade up for Bo Nix. You seem confused. They just didn't want the guy you wanted. Those are different than we duped them into not taking our guy. They definitely thought he'd be available later, and you're like, That's not necessarily.
I don't think he was correct on the Vikings thing. I mean, it was a lie, and it got debunked very, very quickly because right after he claimed that the Vikings that he said he tricked the Vikings into drafting JJ McCarthy so they could draft Bo Nix. Nobody's buying that then, and nobody's buying it now.
I guess if you wanted to dupe the league into them taking Bo Nix, then the Broncos wouldn't have taken him and somebody else would have because there was no duping because the Broncos picked Bo Nix.
At the end, Sean Payton's going to have Brian Billick's career. Brian Billick, when he finally got out of the league, nobody ever gave him a shot again. He won a Super Bowl and nobody ever respected Brian Billick again somehow. He just never coached again because Sean Payton underperformed with Drew Brees. They should have won more, right? Should have won more divisions, gone to more Super Bowls, maybe won a second Super Bowl.
The one that they lost to the Rams the one time around where the defensive pass interference,
that was not his fault.
That was the big snafu. But his whole career, he's been, I guess, labeled as like the quarterback whisperer in a way where it's like, can he solve Russell Wilson's problem?
He wasn't even trying to solve Russell Wilson's problem. He was just trying to get him out of town.
I think the conversation around him has been, he's such a unique offensive mind, and not that the game has necessarily passed him along, but that I guess title has kind of gone to Kyle Shanahan now. It was like Sean McVay, now it's Kyle Shanahan, where Kyle Shanahan is the offensive mind, the guru, all of that.
There's a guy here in Kansas City, I hear, that's pretty damn good
correct.
At that.
Sean Payton used to be that, maybe so. when he won the first one with the Saints, or I guess when he won the one with the Saints, that was the whole thing was, Sean Payton's smarter than everybody. The onside kick, all of this stuff, when it just hasn't materialized into anything outside of just that one Super Bowl.
So, yes, I do think that's twice in the last 5 months or so.
He's lying to himself.
Who's he trying to prove that he's smarter than everybody?
They're the Raiders and the Vikings, evidently.
Yeah. It's
not too hard to do that, I guess.
I'm smarter than the Raiders.
With all that said,
I didn't really accomplish much there.
With all that said, when you have your head coach, though, that is actually invested in the quarterback and it's his guy. In this case, Bo Nix is clearly his guy. I do think they will have some success. Now, everybody's definition of success is different. Am I saying the Broncos are going to go win 10 games and Bo Nix is going to have a rookie of the year? Of course not. But I think Bo Nix will look better than even I thought he would, because he probably does fit Sean Payton's system. But I also think even if you believe Bo Nix is going to be a really good fit in year one, they don't have a ton of weapons on that offense. They just don't. They traded away Jerry Jeudy, I'm sorry. And so Cortland Sutton is about it. And I'm sorry, he's been overrated throughout much of his career. I know we Sean Barber and I went back and forth last year about Cortland Sutton being better than Jordan Addison or not being better. I think Cortland Sutton's very good, but who else on that offense, guys, is a threat to you?
No one.
I mean, Marvin Mims. I guess the running backs, but even still, that's not a receiver.
Okay, I'd like to call Sean Payton on one more lie before we go to break. I just rewatched the War Room video. They don't look excited at all. One half hug and a couple of light claps. No one even seems all that jazzed about it.
They were as excited as you guys were, essentially. They were.
Dude, people were hugging in the streets when they drafted Patrick Mahomes. These dudes look like they're kind of okay with it.
Yeah, Bo Nix is going to be fine, but I don't think they're ever going to win a Super Bowl with Bo Nix.
I agree with you.
They're not, but to Cody's point, I mean, I was almost my response when Cody's like, well, Sean Payton's getting fired in 5 years. Well, I mean, the stats would tell you that's very likely for any coach. The same thing, like, that quarterback's never winning a Super Bowl. I mean, that the odds are against even Caleb Williams or anybody to win a Super Bowl.
He's
like,
probably never won in a division.
Unless
somebody gets hurt.
He's old enough that Patrick Mahomes is going to be in that division with him for a very, very long time. So that will make
that actually might happen.
That will make it very challenging. All right, up next, we get to the 11 o'clock hour. One thing that Cody and I do not agree on when it comes to the playoffs, if the Royals get in.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or trap pick number
1.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.